He is one of America's prominent sports commentators and columnists,
known for his fearless opinions and passionate dialogue.
I know it's sad, but the best sports conversation has absolutely nothing to do with sports.
He has perfected the Daily Sports Podcast, having produced hundreds of topical, credible shows without even a hint of fake news.
No filters, no mute buttons, no BS, just me and whatever the hell I feel like talking about.
He has done 1,700 TV shows, written 8,000 columns, broadcast hundreds of talk shows, published a book.
He has covered every major sports event nationally and worldwide.
And yet, we still can't shut him up.
The ceiling is the roof.
And now from Los Angeles, inside his studio by the Pacific Ocean,
where he plans on hanging out with a beer immediately after this podcast is recorded.
Oh, man.
Here he is, Jay Mariotti.
The show is unmuted. I'm Jay in Los Angeles, and everything eventually ends on this earth. Even a basketball dynasty thought to be as dynamic as any ever assembled. The vulnerability that weakened the Warriors all season has left them exhausted, unsturdy, and all but broken in the fifth and possibly final postseason of their championship run, reduced to unsightly limping and wheezing by the incomparable Kawhi Leonard, a Raptors team that outworks them and confounds them defensively, and above all, the continuing mystery of Kevin Durant. At least Durant finally practiced on Sunday, albeit briefly, giving hope that he'll play Monday night in this NBA Finals elimination game. But will he play? How much will he play, if at all? Why did he have two big ice packs wrapped around his right calf and right Achilles after this so-called practice? And if he does play, how effective will Durant be and how limited will his minutes be? As I said on the last podcast, I am suspicious about whether Durant and his agent, Rich Kleiman, ever wanted him to play in this series, not wanting to aggravate his calf strain heading into that lucrative long-term free agency payday with probably another franchise in a few weeks, and also because Durant might not be very interested in doing favors for a team that, for whatever reason, has not made him feel comfortable, even though he led the Warriors to two NBA titles the last two seasons. All Durant does is lurk in the background, back in the locker room, or at the hotel. And when he is seen, it's only for brief moments in the tunnel. He's always covered in a hoodie or in a White Sox cap that once had hip-hop cred, but these days is just a White Sox cap, right? The company line is that Durant has to be approved by the team's training staff and that he had a bad workout on Thursday, but that doesn't jibe at all with the original diagnosis of a mild calf strain going on, what, 5 weeks ago. So we'll see if Durant plays in Game 5. That would be the wisest decision for his legacy, in that Durant has been accused of being soft, hypersensitive, too obsessed with what people think of him on social media. If KD wants to make a strong point about his character and his toughness, he will ignore the training staff, gut it out, play, even if he hasn't suited up in more than a month, and try to bail the champs out of this 3-1 hole that only one team has overcome in finals history, that being LeBron and the Cavaliers 3 years ago against, yep, the Warriors. Here was Coach Steve Kerr. You can hear the irritation in his voice about the Durant topic.
He's going to practice with us today, and he'll get some extra work in with some of our younger players, and we'll gauge it from there.
Are you more hopeful than you have been the last couple days?
Yeah, because he hasn't done what he's going to do today. He hasn't done. So he's doing more today, and then we'll know more after that.
And if Durant does play, his teammates don't think it will be difficult to integrate him into the lineup. As Steph Curry says, Curry coming off a very rough Game 4 on both ends.
For us, it's just a matter of, can you win one basketball game right now? Can you go out tomorrow, play an amazing 48 minutes, quiet this crowd that's going to be probably unbelievable tomorrow. Slow down a team that's been playing amazing these last, especially these last two games, and just win one basketball game and take it from there. And if we focus on that mission, you know, our history kind of speaks for itself in terms of being able to get that done. Just win one basketball game, and then we'll worry about the rest.
Davide, next row back.
Steph, Davide Chinellato, Gazzetta Italy. Kochkar just said there's a chance KD might be playing tomorrow after all. My question is, how did you see him during this process, him being out, and how your way of playing is going to change if he's back, considering he's probably not going to be at 100%?
I don't think my style will change much at all. It's just, it's, you know, having another powerful weapon out there that can do some very dynamic things on the floor, and we'll be able to adjust and transition pretty smoothly. He's been in, you know, plenty of finals and has played well, and no matter what percentage he's at, I'm sure he'll be impactful and effective out there.
And Klay Thompson went so far to defend Durant, as critics are wondering about his toughness.
That's the hardest part about being an athlete, is going through injuries, especially when your team's playing for a championship. It sucks. I feel for Kevin. I know what type of competitor he is, and we obviously miss him dearly. But whether it's tomorrow or game six, we just got to do everything in our willpower to help him get back. And if that's win a game and be patient, then we got to go do that. But he will be very welcomed, I'll say that much. I think it's pretty easy to realize we obviously miss him out there, and he's propelled us to two championships in the last 2 years, so be pretty storybook if he come back and, you know, help us do the same. Injuries are the hardest part of sports, and it's, you just got to play through them, and not play through them, but manage the injury. It's tough. I mean, I went through it. Kevin's is much more serious than all of ours, and I know how badly he wants to be out there. He's one of the best competitors I've ever been around.
But if Durant does not play and the Warriors lose to the Raptors in Game 5 and leave their dynasty numbers at 3 championships and 2 runner-ups in 5 years, then the coronation becomes an abomination of sorts, right? Especially in the wake of events in what could have been their last 2 games at Oracle Arena. The billionaire team investor who shoved and cursed at Toronto's Kyle Lowry, which only feeds the perception of the Warriors being a bloated Silicon Valley machine that can afford 4 fat salaries on the player payroll. And then the home fans who poured out of that arena in the surreal final minutes of Game 4 instead of sticking around for a nostalgic moment, maybe. How about a standing ovation for this team? No, they just left. Bye. We're out of here. We don't care about the arena shutting down. We don't care about these championships you won. Bye. We're going to beat traffic. I think the champs could have used a boost there. Now they're in Toronto. They have to try to survive that gurgling, quaking scene. How wretched, by the way, to see hundreds of Raptors fans. They had to clear customs. They had to fly across the continent. And there they were after Game 4. They stuck inside the arena for, what, an hour? Otherwise empty, Oracle. And they were singing and chanting and laughing. Listen up. Of course, if the Warriors do somehow cut through the madness, locate their pedigree, and win Game 5, the narrative changes. But are they unified and healthy enough, even if Durant does come back, to reclaim their basketball poetry immediately? Without 3 straight victories in a season when nobody can stop Leonard, who, by the way, is dealing with knee tendonitis that doesn't require daily updates and constant trauma, the Warriors will crash and fail with three trophies for the new arena in San Francisco. Still a monumentally impressive feat in an era of superstar mobility in the NBA and dizzying free agency, yet not quite on the level of, say, the Jordan Bulls, the Showtime Lakers, and other teams considered to be the greatest ever. The Warriors do need that fourth title in 5 years, the first three-peat since the Jordan Bulls, to set themselves apart. And the only way that's going to happen, or we can even consider that happening, is if Durant does play and contributes mightily. And when you see Kevon Looney beg to play the other night after being declared out of the series, and he did play, and when you see Klay play great after he was ruled out of the previous game, and when you see DeMarcus Cousins work to return before he was ready, and when you see Curry succumb to understandable fatigue after a one-man show of 47 points in 42 minutes in that Game 3 loss, I find myself asking this about Kevin Durant and his legacy. When we're damn certain that Curry, Thompson, Looney, Cousins, Iguodala, pretty much every other NBA player would gut it out in the finals, Kawhi Leonard, Kyle Lowry, keep going, Fred VanVleet, after sitting more than a month with a calf strain, what? Why is he still sitting and hiding back in the locker room and not practicing until Sunday when he barely practiced at all and then whipped those ice bags on his legs? This is either a real injury, although as you can tell, I have my great doubts, a prank on Durant's way to the Clippers, Knicks, or Nets, a case of the Warriors not revealing the true extent of his injury, or quite possibly one of the weeniest individual quit jobs I have ever seen in sports. Willis Reed coming down the tunnel. Michael Jordan playing sick. Kevin Durant has a White Sox cap on in the tunnel. And if it does end this way, how appropriate. The all-time scorer who joined the super team to win the titles he could not win in Oklahoma City, only to be criticized for taking the easy way out, quits on that super team in his famous final scene and watches them flop and wheeze and break down without him. Feels kind of cold and empty, doesn't it, this sports business?
All you need to know about sports today in 15 minutes, or maybe 18, you know, depending on the Warriors, the Steelers, Trump, and the LeBron James Media Network.
And that's why America has grown to admire Kawhi Leonard, who also is playing hurt and never lets on about it, as the Raptors ceded to his wishes to lessen his workload, his playing load, during the regular season. And doesn't that load management thing look shrewd now? Everybody mocked that phrase, load management. It came out of Toronto. Management said, the Raptors team bosses said, hey, Kawhi, yes, you can sit out games. That's fine. Kawhi did. Look at how he has been healthy in the playoffs, even though he's fighting that tendonitis. They were progressive there. You got to hand it to Masai Ujiri and the people running the Raptors, and I'm not hearing enough praise for them right now. Leonard is just like Durant, an impending elite free agent with an injury. Yet Kawhi, unlike KD, is getting raves, and he would be my number one target in free agency in a few weeks as a drama-free, no-nonsense, get-it-done alpha dog. A Golden State dynasty built on hype, dazzle, and bombast is being slayed by a quiet, humble, low-key, sometimes barely audible superstar who is the very antithesis of basketball's self-promoting gods. Kawhi is not a social media egomaniac. Kawhi doesn't need to be a Hollywood executive producer of movies, documentaries, and game shows, including putting contests, miniature golf, Steph Curry. Kawhi doesn't shimmy, flex, or pretend to lift his big balls. You saw Klay the other night. Kawhi doesn't attack the President of the United States. No, Kawhi simply glides and takes over games offensively and defensively without any sort of announcement, almost effortlessly, and he has done so, as I said, while playing hurt himself. He is the unassuming, scandal-free megastar this country so desperately needs right now, even if he's about to win a championship for Canada. The dude is just doing his job without muss and fuss. And if more athletes took Kawhi's cue, as his Toronto teammates have, maybe sports would be a less volatile place.
I don't play hero basketball. I'm not playing for, you know, fans or, you know, I'm just playing to win. I'm not out here trying to break records, whatever. It's on the scoreboard. As long as I try to help my team win, I'm satisfied with it.
And if Leonard finishes what he started and wins the Finals MVP award, he will have won his own personal triumph, thumbing his nose at Greg Popovich and the San Antonio Spurs, who all but accused him of malingering last season when he sat out most of the year with a quad injury that led to his trade to Toronto, a drama that started, stunningly enough, remember this, when an airborne Leonard landed after a jump shot on the very large, strategically placed, perhaps, shoe of Zaza Pachulia, then with the Warriors, and suffered a serious injury that knocked him out of that Western Conference final 2 years ago. So Leonard has won a double whammy here over Popovich and the champs, if he closes this out tonight, because after all, he suffered that injury in Oakland while earning comparisons to none other than Michael Jordan with 13 games of 30 or more points this postseason. But legacy, come on, do you really think Kawhi Leonard is thinking about legacy?
I mean, I've never been, you know, one of those guys that, you know, growing up in high school, getting all the media and the college media, so I don't really think my legacy is going to ever reach the potentials of Michael Jordan and, you know, how the media fought them since they were a rookie. But as far as me, just want to play and just let people remember that you know, I played hard both ends of the floor. I was a winner, and you know, that's basically it. I'm just here enjoying my dream and having fun. I mean, legacy is going to be opinionated by, you know, each person, but I'm just playing and worried about myself, really, and what I feel, what makes me happy.
But is it important to you how things have changed in the last few years and how you've been portrayed in the media?
It really didn't matter. I didn't make a decision off the media or, you know, what people thought of me. Like I said, I made it off my own personal views and what I've seen and how I felt as a person to make myself happy.
And that tendonitis in his knee, remember when Kawhi had that goofy laugh last year? We rarely hear him speak. We never had heard him laugh. And then he comes out with this weird laugh. Well, I'm surprised he didn't laugh when they asked him about the tendonitis in his knee.
Yeah, for sure. You know, you do your warm-up, get treatment before the game, off days. After the game, whatever, that can help you speed your recovery up so you're able to play the next day.
And remember when Popovich said Leonard was not a great leader, which actually did myth Kawhi? Well, Leonard has led admirably by example, and the Raptors have seized the 3-1 lead with a poised professional savvy uncommon for a team making its first NBA Finals appearance. Thing is, Kawhi is not new at this. He was the last Finals MVP before the Warriors made their five-year run. And huge credit here goes to the Raptors president, Ujiri, for having the gumption not to remain stagnant. And by gambling on a one-year rental of Leonard, he did that by trading all-star DeMar DeRozan for Leonard. Then Ujiri fired the NBA Coach of the Year, Dwayne Casey, and everybody said, what the hell are you doing? And hired his assistant, Nick Nurse, a coaching vagabond who has bounced around the minor leagues and even all around England, of all places, where he had to actually wait for recreational badminton and indoor soccer games to end so he could coach his players some schemes. But he had to wait for the badminton guys to leave the rec center. Also, Nurse was expected to drive the team's minibus to games throughout England, except he couldn't because he didn't have the proper driver's license. This is Nick Nurse's pedigree. Steve Kerr. Oh, let's see. I played for Phil Jackson, and I played for Greg Popovich. Nick Nurse, I couldn't drive the bus in England, and I had to wait for the badminton guys to leave the court. That's what's so beautiful about this. Nick Nurse, first year, is going to win an NBA championship. This is great, too. As the owner, GM, and coach of the Brighton Bears in England, Nurse once hired Dennis Rodman as a one-game publicity stunt to sell tickets for a now-defunct franchise. Steve Kerr played with Dennis Rodman. Nick Nurse had to hire him as a publicity stunt. Now, Ujiri could have opted for Mike Budenholzer, but after Nurse's passionate presentation in a job interview, the Raptors stayed in-house with the assistant. What we have here, two all-time basketball decisions, Leonard and Nurse. And Nurse has beaten the Warriors at their own game. 17 three-pointers in Game 3, he told his team, just fire away, guys. And they did. But Nurse also has been brilliant creatively in his execution and tactics. Funny how he's no longer mocked now for that box and one against Curry, which Nurse used in a G League game between his Iowa Energy and the Bakersfield Jam back in 2011, when that unconventional strategy did work against somebody named Trey Johnson. And then it worked against Steph Curry. If not for that Iguodala three, you're looking at a Toronto sweep. Whoa. Gutsy stuff here. For instance, taking Danny Green out of the lineup to negate Golden State's traditional third-quarter dominance and using Fred VanVleet with Kyle Lowry. And not only have they been effective offensively, those two point guards, they've also been two middle linebackers in their physical play against Curry. That's all Nick Nurse is doing, as is Serge Ibaka, the reemergence of Serge. He has been turned loose by Nurse, given new life with his shot blocking and mid-range shot making. The Nick Nurse story is not supposed to happen, folks. He's 51, head coach, first time in the NBA, an Iowa farm boy from way back. He brings his guitar on the road to play Bob Dylan and Johnny Cash music. As I said, he didn't have the advantage of growing up in the NBA in that culture as Kerr did. Nurse coached for a long, long time in places like Edinburgh, Texas, in Manchester, England, and in his idle time, he once wrote a 31-page book called The Black Book of Shooting. I don't think you're going to find that in a bookstore or on Amazon, but look at Nick Nurse now. He finds himself living the ultimate dream, and here he was trying to convince an entire vast country up north that a championship is won with four victories. Not three, not yet.
You know, my message to them is we've never really talked about the series score. Can't let people take you someplace you aren't yet, right? And we know this is a great team, and we know how hard we have to play to beat them. You know, home or away, we know how hard we have to play, and just focus in on trying to be the hardest working team on the floor. If we do that, then we'll give ourselves a chance to win and go from there.
One such fan is superfan Nave. You've seen him. He wears a turban, and he does reflect Toronto's very unique diversity as a city. That's what is so special about the Raptors. They symbolize the NBA as an international force which has united people who have come to Canada from all over the world. Here is the superfan.
Hey, superfan at Oracle Center, a history-making event. We winning 3-1. And now we are going to finish on Monday in Toronto. We have never been here. Our fans are the best in the league. It's because of the fans, players, and the team that we are celebrating this win today. Go Raptors, go, and let's wrap it up on Monday.
Finally, Kawhi was asked about the Canadian fans, and he really didn't know what to say. if they were hoping up north for a thunderous guarantee of victory from Kawhi, then a statement that he will re-sign with the Raptors, well, you're forgetting that Leonard is the ultimate mercenary in a multi-billion dollar industry. You're just going to have to enjoy your championship, assuming they get it, and then you're going to have to probably wave goodbye to Kawhi. Here was Kawhi on those Canadians.
I'm really not sure. I guess you really have to ask somebody on the street or one of our fans. I'm pretty sure it's a long time waiting. They're going to be excited. They're already excited just as just being here for the first time. They're going crazy after the Eastern Conference Finals, and I don't know. There's no telling. You got to ask probably like I said, a fan or somebody that's in Canada, that's been living in Canada for a while. But, I mean, I know they're going to be super excited. I don't know. We'll see.
I don't know. Maybe Kawhi signs a one-year deal in Toronto and tries to repeat. Or maybe he flees to the Clippers right now in his native Southern California. Whatever. His season in Toronto has been historic, and it cements Kawhi Leonard as a two-time champion, assuming they do win, and basketball's best two-way player of the moment. Also, it cements him as the man who flipped the bird at Greg Popovich. Kiss my ass, Pop. If the dynasty ends with a thud, the Warriors always will have the Durant excuse. But only weeks ago, after eliminating Houston and sweeping Portland without Durant, they thought they could complete the mission without him, which would have proved Draymond Green right. Remember the crux of Green's on-court screed against Durant back in November, which has been the backdrop of an uncomfortable season? Green, in effect, told Durant they had won a championship before he showed up, which was poor form, especially doing it publicly during a game, considering Draymond was the first Warrior to text KD for help after they had blown that 3-1 lead to Cleveland in 2016. That coming, of course, after Green was suspended for swatting LeBron in the crown jewels. Draymond is such a hypocrite. He's such a fool. Now, obviously, the Warriors have been exposed by Leonard's greatness and Nurse's tactics. Physicality does work against them, and it hasn't helped that Thompson had to miss a game, and Looney had to miss a game, and Cousins is playing hurt, and Curry is gassed and playing poor defense. But hey, I need to remind you of the flip side. Toronto was stretched to a 7th game overtime by Philadelphia, and then stretched by Milwaukee in a physical series. And the Raptors have had their own injuries, Leonard, Lowry, Van Vliet. But they are tougher and better than the Warriors. Tougher-minded. And Draymond has been outplayed up front by Leonard, Pascal Siakam, and Ibaka. Tell you what, I'm really sick of Draymond's soundbites. Didn't Steve Kerr say a couple months ago, I'm really sick of Draymond? Well, so am I. The other night after losing Game 3, you heard Draymond utter this in that arrogant, kind of flighty tone of his.
You know, no one cared if guys are hurt. Everybody wants to see us lose. So I'm sure people are happy they're hurt. We just got to continue to battle and win the next game, go back to Toronto, win Game 5, come back to Oracle, win Game 6, and then celebrate. Fun times ahead.
Does he know what a jackass he sounds like now? That's a guarantee, and I could peep the other night easily. He's toning it down now, but Green still doesn't seem to get it.
I mean, that's important, you know, to have that pride, have the faith in what we're capable of. You know, like you said, just got to take it one game at a time. We got to win one game. We win one, then we'll build on that. You know, but I've been on the wrong side of 3-1 before, so why not make our own history?
Please, Draymond, just shut up. Now, Steve Kerr gets it. His team has dealt with adversity. But after adding Durant, the Warriors were expected to breeze to 3 championships. They did in 2017, but last year they were lucky to survive the Rockets. and this time they apparently are not surviving at all. Here was Kerr, always armed with perspective.
We play basketball for a living, or coach for a living. We're among the luckiest people on earth. I don't know if that was Kyle's angle, but that's how I approach things. It's all perspective. So we are incredibly lucky to live the lives that we do and to be here competing for an NBA championship. And so when you talk about pressure and daunting tasks and all that, just look around. Look around the world. We're doing all right. I mean, we're lucky, and we know how lucky we are. So you got to keep everything in perspective.
All of which means the passage of time always brings change on planet Earth, as Klay Thompson, the poet, reflected.
I just try to enjoy the journey, and it's been a very long one since we've been on this, you know, championship run, whether it was, and it started way back, you know, 2014. So you wish to have no end in sight, but everything that's great always comes to an end. So whether that's tomorrow or 4 years from now, you never know. That's the beauty of life. So you just got to go out and enjoy every minute you do with the group of guys you got, because it's in professional sports, nothing's ever guaranteed. And you can, you know, look back on any professional league and see that there's so many examples in the history of the sport. So that's how, like, what keeps me in the present moment.
And did Klay actually toss in a mock of Kawhi Leonard's infamous laugh from a few months back? I was telling you about that earlier. You know, he goes, this, it came out of nowhere. Was that really you, Kawhi? Well, listen to Klay after somebody asks him a question Sunday that Klay does not like.
Klay Wesley Eddy from 7D Sports. We all know about Game 6, Klay, but there might not be a Game 6. Are we going to see a Game 5, Klay, instead now?
I don't know what Klay was doing there, but the last laugh probably is on the Golden State Warriors. They will move to their new arena next season and continue to be a contender, but a dynasty, barring a miracle, that's gone. As I said the other day, and I think I might trademark this, the dynasty is dying nasty. As concerns escalate about the safety of athletes inside arenas, it's obviously no longer wise in these volatile times for public figures to go to nightclubs. David Ortiz is ultra popular with his Big Poppy persona, but Sunday night in his native Dominican Republic, Ortiz was ambushed by a man who got off a motorcycle and shot him in the back at nearly point-blank range. Ortiz was taken to a Santo Domingo hospital where his condition was stable, and the gunman was beaten by a crowd of people who captured him at the nightclub. Big Poppy should know these days to bring the party to him. It is scary out there. And if the NBA Finals are finished on Monday night, you can just watch Game 7 of a fascinating Stanley Cup Finals on Wednesday night. With so many storylines, I don't even know where to start, but let's start here. The St. Louis Blues were living by the sword with all sorts of cheap shots and hits to the head, and then they died by the sword in a potential clinching situation at home in Game 6, when an early boarding penalty followed by a delay of game penalty gave Boston a two-man advantage, and finally, a Bruins power play that had gone flat awakened. And behind goalie Tuukka Rask, the Bruins return home for Game 7. They're not going to lose that, are they? The referees had ignored too many dirty Blues hits, including a blatant trip on Noah Achari, as Bruins coach Bruce Cassidy noted angrily after Game 5.
Coach, just how would you describe the officiating in that game?
Well, I mean,
Why don't you just ask me what you want to ask me, Joe? We've been through this a lot. You talking about the one call, non-call?
Couple of non-calls, couple of hits to the head.
Well, those are the hits they want to get out of the game, correct? That's what I hear a lot about. Clearly, they missed a couple tonight. It's a fast game. I sat here 2 days ago or whatever it was. I said I believe these officials are at this level because they've earned the right to be here, and you should be getting the best. But, I mean, the narrative changed after game three. There was a complaint or whatever put forth by the opposition, and it just seems to have changed everything. I mean, the non-call on Achari, their player's on his way to the box. I mean, they're the only, it's right in front of the official. It's a slew foot. Our guy's gone. The spotter took him took him out of the game for a possible concussion. I mean, it's blatant. It had a big effect in the game. I mean, this has happened. I'm a fan of the game. It's the National Hockey League getting a black eye with their officiating this playoffs. And here's another one that's going to be talked about. I thought it was a great hockey game. That call probably, I mean, there's time, but it really made it difficult for us to get the win tonight. So I'm disappointed. So I guess to answer your original question, it was egregious.
Cassidy got the officials' attention as nothing was disputed about Game 6, which the Bruins won fair and square with the impetus of a foolish error by the Blues owner Tom Stillman. Before today, I didn't know who Tom Stillman was. But somehow, Stillman allowed the St. Louis Post-Dispatch, which is still in existence, to publish a letter in its digital edition thanking Blues fans after the, quote, elation of breaking through and bringing St. Louis its first ever Stanley Cup, unquote. Oh, premature elation. Tom Stillman, who even spoke about a parade on Market Street. And of course, the Bruins seized this nonsense to quiet the pandemonium in the enemy arena and give the Stanley Cup favorites a good shot to clinch at home. This is not the sort of series the NHL wanted in its new speed and skill era. It's been way too heavy-handed, too dirty. And yes, the playoffs have been tainted by an officiating crisis. There were too many monumental screw-ups that impacted results. You had San Jose advancing with a flurry of power play goals because a Las Vegas player was wrongly penalized. You had the Blues having to survive an overtime goal that was scored on a hand pass in the San Jose series. And you've had too many cases where on-ice officials have been ignoring dirty hits to the head, and they allow players to keep playing with the league office stepping in with a one-game suspension when necessary. This Stanley Cup final has been really dirty. I thought the league was heading towards speed and skill and fun and youth. Nope. This has been heavy-handed, dirty, just a lot of old-school hockey. Some people love it. I don't think it helps the NHL's cause. The league also can't get replay right. Gary Bettman has failed as the NHL commissioner because he hasn't sufficiently marketed a sport that is breathtaking to watch in person, but not on television. And nobody knows the stars of the game, even though they're great athletes. And then when the postseason is marred by constant officiating mistakes, maybe it's just time for new blood at the top. And ready or not, in golf's new quick rat-a-tat-tat succession of major championships, the U.S. Open is upon us at golf porn dazzling Pebble Beach, which means Tiger Woods has been declared the favorite by some, including Jack Nicklaus, whose record of 18 majors Woods is still chasing. And people just seem to want to recall Woods' astounding romp at Pebble Beach by 15 strokes, including Nicklaus. But Jack, that was 19 years, 4 back surgeries, and numerous other ailments and addictions, and one whopping scandal ago. And while Tiger proved at Augusta National that he can still win on the highest level, he unfortunately is trying to make more history in the face of the Brooks Koepka storm. Woods has tweaked his game to adjust to his new body, controlling his drivers and his three woods and setting up his sterling iron game. But really now, how is he going to beat Koepka, who is chasing his 5th title in the last 9 majors and is establishing one of the dominant runs in golf history? unlike the whiners out there, hello, Phil Mickelson, hello, Rory McIlroy, who trashed the United States Golf Association for making the Open an almost impossible 4 days of torture, Koepka just sort of shows up, bullies the course, and then waits for the others to beat themselves. The perfect Open mentality, if you ask me, and why he has won the last two Opens at Erin Hills and Shinnecock Hills. If the USGA turns Pebble into a monster, Koepka will shut out the noise and win once again, as Mickelson goes 0-30 at the U.S. Open. Although I should say McIlroy did win the Canadian Open Sunday at 22 under par. But this is not Raptors Warriors, folks. The Canadian Open is a butterfly. The U.S. Open is a monster. Now it's time for the buzz, our deep dive into sports and life. Chris joins the program. And Chris, do you think Kevin Durant has been tanking it? This is not a broken leg or a torn ligament. It's a calf strain. He has missed more than a month. And most NBA players and all of his teammates who have dealt with injuries and ailments, and I mean Clay and Cousins and Looney, Curry, Iguodala, they'd be out there with the same injury, okay? We have seen Willis Reed limp down a tunnel, Jordan play sick as can be. I can give you other stories, although Paul Pierce said he wasn't ill. I don't know what that was about. It's a lie. I'm not buying, Chris, that the Warriors training staff is making this decision alone. Is Durant becoming an all-time sports weenie if he doesn't play in Game 5?
Jay, I don't know if he's tanking it, but here's the thing. He doesn't win either way. Okay, they're outmatched by the Raptors. Kawhi's on fire. The team's on fire. So if he comes back, it's obviously something. First off, you're right. It's something not what we're hearing from. Okay, it's either he's tanking it or the injury is much more serious. I'd go with the latter. So he's going to go out there. They're not going to win the series, and then people are going to pile on Kevin Durant. If he stays out, people go, see, they needed Durant. He didn't want to come back. And yeah, sure, the things about his personality and did he tank it? Did he not want to come back? Did he want to show everybody that they needed him? All those come into play. But ultimately, him coming back, they're not going to win the series. I believe that now. I was one of the people who said Warriors are going to sweep. Obviously, I was way wrong. Didn't realize how good the Raptors are. Didn't realize the power of Jurassic Park, Jay.
And Chris, if you're Kawhi Leonard and you win another ring in the Finals MVP trophy tonight, do you stay in Toronto for a one-year extension and try to win again? Or has he already proven his point to Greg Popovich? This would be his second championship. And now, go to L.A. and shove it up LeBron's tail and make Los Angeles Kawhi Town.
I don't see the upside to making L.A. his town. The East is wide open. The Raptors are that good. Toronto loves him. He would be a hero forever. I don't know if any of that means anything to Kawhi. I don't really know what means anything to Kawhi. He's just an odd dude. He's odd. But God love him, he can play basketball. And God love him, he's going to win the NBA Finals and beat the Dynasty, beat the Warriors. So he can really do whatever he wants. I say stay in Toronto, bro.
And Chris, your thoughts on the Stanley Cup Finals? I know you're not a hockey guy, and no thoughts on Gloria, but just how it ended.
Gloria. I haven't watched any of the Stanley Cup Finals, but I am going to watch Game 7. Because Game 7 in NHL playoffs, especially the Stanley Cup Finals, as they say, a tradition unlike any other.
And Chris, if you'd like to pick Tiger Woods at the Open, go ahead. But I was right about Koepka at the PGA, and I'm sticking with him here because he does not whine about the Open. He just hangs in there, and he plays and wins, and he becomes bigger than the course. The other guys shrink. He says, I'm Brooks Koepka. I'm bigger than you, you mean old monster. Also, Chris, do you like the new format of four majors from April to mid-July, or is it just too packed in, too condensed, leaving the rest of the golfing season sort of empty?
I think it's too condensed. I think it's also not great for Tiger to be able to compete like we've seen, long term at least. I'm going to go with Koepka. I'm going to go with your pick. I think he's on fire. I just don't think Tiger's going to be able to pull it out. But, you know, he does like to make those weekend surges, so we will see, Jay. But I go with Koepka for another major, albeit a boring one.
Okay, thanks, Chris, which brings us to quickies, which are just that quick. The U.S. women's soccer team already has made its historical mark for its sweeping impact in 1999, its dominant romp in the 2015 World Cup, and its relentless crusade for equal pay. But in their last major tournament, the Americans crashed at the 2016 Rio Olympics, making this year's World Cup in France a vital bounce-back mission. Yet already there is noise in the house. Coach Jill Ellis is under fire from, yep, you guessed it, rabble-rouser Hope Solo, who is no longer the U.S. goalie, but ripped Ellis for, quote, cracking under pressure, apparently referring to the Rio crash. This is the same Hope Solo who called Sweden's national team, quote, a bunch of cowards, unquote, at the 2016 Olympics, and rightfully so. Solo's contract was eliminated, and she was suspended from the U.S. Federation after those remarks. So, really, it's time to ignore Hope Solo. She's not even a part of this. Yet, along with Ellis, all eyes are on a younger U.S. team with a new goalie and an early round test against those Swedes, who I do not think are cowards. The Americans are slight favorites in a field stronger than ever, thanks to investments and advancements in women's soccer globally, including a $500 million investment last week from scandal-ridden FIFA, for what it's worth. U.S. star Alex Morgan still aches from that ugly loss 3 years ago.
Well, I think for myself, at least, like, 2016 was really big for this team because it was, we bowed out so early and earlier than we ever have in a major tournament, really. So I definitely look upon that for like motivation and encouragement, because I never want to feel the way that I felt after that tournament. And so looking ahead now, I think that this team is more, the personnel is more from 16. So I think we have to look at how we can turn around and like continue to hold that number one ranking and like really prove, you know, what we've been working on and like what we could put forward in this tournament, like just show our best, like when the pressure's on. And I believe that we could do that. But for me, it's more drawing on 16 because I think that stings.
A Mariotti prediction: the U.S. reaches the final against France and loses in France. Sorry, does that make me un-American? With the Cubs grabbing Craig Kimbrell and the Braves signing Dallas Keuchel, collusion finally has given way to what could be a real cool National League pennant race. I said it. I said something good about baseball. The Dodgers are the favorites in the NL, thumping all through that lineup with Cody Bellinger showing no signs of letting up on his MVP mission, and already envisioning a playoff rotation of Ryu, Kershaw, and Buehler. But the Braves are serious about challenging the Phillies in the East, and the Cubs continue to throw millions in their never-ending quest to fix the ninth inning. Aroldis Chapman, Wade Davis, Brandon Morrow, and now Kimbrell, who still has not appeared in a game as he undertakes his belated spring training thanks to the owners who did not bid for him for 2 months. The Keuchel and Kimbrell fiasco exposed the baseball owners for what they are, cheap bastards who prefer to protect the compensation system than win championships, but I will applaud those who are chasing titles, such as the Cubs and the Braves. Kimbrell thought the pressure was insane in Boston. Wait until he tips a pitch and blows a save on the north side of Chicago. Soon enough, a team such as the Astros will be trading for Madison Bumgarner. Can you imagine Verlander, Cole, and Bumgarner in the postseason rotation? While tempestuous Trevor Bauer, Marcus Stroman, Matt Boyd, and perhaps Noah Syndergaard, Thor, could be available in trades in coming weeks. I'm still liking an Astros-Dodgers rematch in the World Series, and here in Los Angeles, there is mass panic as I say that, with the Dodgers only 2 World Series losses from becoming the Buffalo Bills of baseball. By the way, Bumgarner desperately needs a change of scenery, long removed from the glory days when the Giants won 3 World Series in 5 years. Bumgarner first grew angry at the umps on Sunday, then he almost lost his mind after the Dodgers' Max Muncy flipped his bat and admired a 426-foot home run into McCovey Cove in San Francisco. Bumgarner confronted Muncy and had to be restrained. Remember when Bumgarner used to go after Yasiel Puig? Now it's Muncy. And afterward, what a great comment by Muncy, who basically is a mild-mannered guy, never causes trouble. Muncy says after the game, quote, "If he doesn't want me to watch the ball, go get it out of the ocean," quote, unquote. That would be the San Francisco Bay, not the Pacific Ocean, but when it comes to a home run off the bitter former October hero Bumgarner, a body of water is a body of water. And because prosecutors suspected Tyreek Hill was set up on a tape by his fiance, the child abuse criminal case against the Kansas City receiver no longer is being pursued. Meaning, it's likely Hill will play for the Chiefs this season, since the NFL is still waiting for permission from the Kansas Department for Children and Families to interview Hill. Again, media people who judged this case without knowing all the facts. I was reading that Hill should be in prison, never should play in the NFL again. These media people should not be in the media. Who hires them? It's the easiest column out there, lashing out at an alleged abuser, and the only fact that made premature criticism acceptable in this case is that Hill does have a previous history of domestic abuse. But why does a fiance tape a conversation with Hill after their three-year-old child had been injured, unless perhaps she has an ulterior motive? She taped it and then made it public. Why does she do that? Think, media people. Think. Don't assume, because then you become the first three letters of assume. That would be A-S-S-S. These cases are not always as one-sided as they seem. Do your homework. Don't be lazy. Take some law classes. Maybe find a new profession, but most of all, get a life. And a triple crown that never should have been staged after 29 horse deaths at Santa Anita and a disastrous Kentucky Derby and a riderless horse at the Preakness finally is over. The winners don't matter. What matters is that Santa Anita should be shut down and the people who run the sport should be held accountable for the crisis. But despite two more deaths in the last 2 days, Santa Anita management says racing will continue for the rest of the current meet. Where's the state of California? Where's the Supreme Court? Where is Congress? That's what we're getting at here. 29 horse deaths since Christmas time. Sometimes I wonder why horse racing and auto racing, both death sports, right, still exist in this evolved world. Problem is, sport does not evolve. It is still grounded in making money, period. Safety be damned.
And now a final Mariotti commentary too hot for ESPN, too smart for the internet, and too white male for Jemele Hill. Take it away, Jay.
Few challenges are more confounding in sports than trying to define Rafael Nadal's place in history. Only two victories from Roger Federer's all-time mark of 20 Grand Slams, and still just age 33, Nadal seemingly is destined to be remembered as the greatest tennis player ever. But whoa there! Is that actually true? When his success rates on the three tennis surfaces are disproportionate. 12 of Nadal's 18 titles have been on red clay at the French Open, while he has won only twice at Wimbledon, three times at the U.S. Open, and only once at the Australian, all grass or hard surfaces. Not to demean supremacy on clay, but how can Nadal be knighted as the greatest player of all time when he hasn't come close to the hard court and grass court exploits of Federer and Novak Djokovic, who was disappointing in losing in the semis in Paris while Federer was falling to 0-6 against Nadal at Roland Garros. Just the same, when Federer and Djokovic are no match for Nadal on clay, how can either of those gentlemen be called the greatest of all time? Unlike golf, where Jack Nicklaus and Tiger Woods have played on uniform courses, we can't simply point to the standings and say, Nicklaus 18, Woods 15, Jack is still the greatest. No, in tennis, we must settle and say this. No player in the history of the sport has been more successful on a particular surface than Nadal, who is 93-2 in his career at Roland Garros. Nor can I say that Federer, who has won 8 times at Wimbledon, 6 at the Australian, and 5 at the U.S. Open, is the most complete all-time champion, because he has a hole in his record in Paris with only one win back in 2009 when Nadal was upset in the fourth round by, who would know this? Anybody? Robin Soderling. Ding, ding, ding. But I should say this. Nadal did break through one time against Federer on grass in a final, winning the 2008 Classic at Wimbledon. Isn't this confusing? Might that be a tiebreaker in our debate, that one match? No, it only happened once. If it happened 3 or 4 times, yeah. I would love to see Nadal rise up and win more majors on grass and hard courts before health issues eventually force his retirement. But until then, I cannot summarily say that he is about to become the greatest of all time, just as I cannot call Federer the greatest of all time. So we'll call it a split. We take the easy way out. I know it's boring, it's cowardly, but it is fair in the case of tennis, which has 3 surfaces. That's our show. For our producer and editor, Chris, I am Jay, reminding you to never, ever let anybody mute you in life.